Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score.
So here we are in the Media Project, an opportunity for us to have a half hour of commentary, analysis, and hopefully some insights into the media issues of the week. Stu Shinsky is here, the executive editor of Poughkeepsie Journal.
Gentlemen, an absolute pleasure to be back with you.
Sir, wonderful to see you. Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, is on that end of the studio table. And I say we keep him down there. Isolated.
What you really mean is the rear end of the table.
Well, the end is the butt of the table.
But he is wearing a Tyrex.
And he looks
and
very
we're
good.
And we're not. He
dashing
is quite debonair.
As can be.
Quite debonair. The fashion plate of WAMC.
And you're Rex of the, you know, the editor of the very important newspaper in New York, the Albany Times Union.
The Times Union.
Yeah.
Which had, by the way, our state editor, Casey Seiler, won the award at the Legislative Correspondents Association
and
show.
And well
for
deserved
the,
it.
Outstanding journalism of the year.
And well deserved it. He's been on this station many times.
Mm-hmm.
And we like him very much. Rex, it's interesting seeing you sitting next to Stu Shinsky.
Yes.
You're both powerful editors in your own rights. The Poughkeepsie Journal is
powerful.
Poughkeepsie Journal wins award after award.
True.
So does the Times Union, as you've just braggadocio implied or stated. And so my question to you is, whatever happened to competition between newspapers? You know, in the old days when they duke it out, go head-to-head, now everybody's nicey-nicey to everybody else. What, you know, I sort of miss the old days when, you know, editors really went for each other.
Or a thumb wrestle, Rex?
Yeah, right. No, you're bigger than I am.
No, is it? No, in all honesty, do you think there's less sort of competition?
Well, there is less competition, certainly among newspapers, because there are fewer newspapers. And there are very few cities that have more than one paper. In our community, in the capital region, we actually do have competition
multiple
among papers.
Papers.
Yeah, because there are several papers that we're the regional paper, we like to say, and there are then community papers in each of the communities that we serve. And so there is competition. But, you know, you don't go after each other the way that used to be in the old tradition, right?
Yeah, it used to be that there were so many newsrooms, newspapers. And now, you know, our biggest competitor is people's time. We have to get them to choose to give us their time. And that could mean we have to get into the world via social media. Media, via the paper, via the website. It's, yes, I mean, we have some competition in our area in the Mid-Hudson Valley region of New York. From Kingston, New York, there's a publication there, the Daily Freeman. Middletown, New York, the Times Herald Record. But we want readers. If we get readers, then I think we're doing the best we can in that competition. Not beat them or beat them, but do the best job we can.
The other thing, Alan, is that you're in competition with our newspapers as well. When you look at WAMC.org, if there is information there, I mean, we're all competing in the same space, in the digital space.
Well, yes and no. Look, Rex, let's say it like it is. We love having you as a partner, and we love having the Berkshire Eagle as a partner.
Mm-hmm.
And we have your people on the radio with us as regular people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
We've made, in fact, I think we've made brands out of people like you and Mike Spain.
Or as Rosemary likes to say when she's on the air in WMC, as Alan says, you'd be nobody without me.
That's right. Yeah, well, that's right. So, but in the seriousness of the point is that we have learned that it helps us to have these cooperative relationships, and it doesn't hurt us. It's all good, the way that I see it. But in the old days, there would have been a competition. One of your predecessors, you know, used to really dislike me and the product a little bit, and you came on, and you made all the difference in the world, Rex, and
well,
I want to thank you for that.
Very kind of you. Why, thank you. You're very. Actually, I do think that in this era, especially, media do need to collaborate. There's an extraordinary situation out in San Francisco, where my company Hearst owns the San Francisco Chronicle, where I believe 80 now media organizations teamed up to do a single day of focus entirely on the homeless problem in San Francisco. And there is actually, I think, the only major media outlet that didn't participate is one TV station. And San Francisco, of course, has so many online sites. It's really the home of a lot of digital pure plays that there are many, many media. The homelessness issue on the streets of San Francisco has become so big that the editor of the Chronicle, Audrey Cooper, decided, hey, let's see if we can get some partners to make a big focus on this for one day. And some of them are doing it for more than a day, but on one particular day, you cannot pick up media in San Francisco without reading about the homeless issue, which they've all been covering for years. I mean, Audrey was telling me the other day, she slapped her forehead when somebody said, why don't you ever write about the solutions to the homelessness issue? She said, how many times have we written about this?
Why don't you ever?
Yeah, why don't you ever?
I love those
questions. We hear that all the time, you know. Why are you people not covering blah, blah, blah? Well, how do you know about it if we haven't
covered? You know, here at WMC, we have a wonderful news director, a young man named Ian Pickus. And Ian Pickus is great at assembling every story. So when I get one of those, terrible, why don't you ever write about this story or talk about this story, he can supply links, you know, that go on for pages about having done that story.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I never hear back from them, of course.
No. The only bad part about this notion of collaboration is that there is some benefit, isn't there, to if you have competition, you're working harder to get a story? Is that the theory? But it doesn't often really happen that way.
But isn't it a matter of character? I mean, my character is, I hate to say this, somewhat competitive.
Do you think?
If you get a nice person like you, Rex, or Stu is the nicest person that anybody's ever met.
Oh, right. Many people say that.
Almost everybody says it, you know.
Almost.
Okay, not so much about you, Rex, but about Stuart. They say that. So isn't it about character? You get the head of a newsroom who's got blood in his eye. That's different from a nice person being at the helm.
You know, the competition these days should be about quality. Because
I don't care about should and schmud.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not talking about should.
You know,
I'm talking about is.
Is. Well, is. And it is about quality because, honestly, if you're not doing a job, people are going to say, bye, I'm going to get my news elsewhere. And I think that's really the competition is that the choices are so vast, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a website, whether it's a social media feed, where they can somewhat say, I didn't like that you didn't use this word in this story. And they're going to go somewhere else. So the quality matters. And that's why, you know, investigative journalism, which we're doing a lot of, and certainly Rex is doing it, and so many other newsrooms, that's the differentiator between a real newsroom these days and uniqueness from other content. But the competition is that sometimes those are the stories that are the most competitive but can provide the biggest difference between you and other outlets.
But I'll tell you, Alan, what's going to really cause your listeners to raise a question, and this is a little bit awkward perhaps having Stu in the room because his company is involved. Gannett, which is, and I think now the second largest chain in the country, right? Is CNHI still?
Depends on how it's measured.
Depends
by,
how you measure.
By papers or by revenues.
Which way do you win?
Gannett is certainly up there. I believe we have the largest revenues. I believe it is. I am not totally sure. But we do have 114 newsrooms in our company.
114 newsrooms. And Gannett has made an $864 million bid to buy Tribune Company, which includes the Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune, the Hartford Current,
Allentown Morning Call, Orlando Sentinel,
right.
Fort Lauderdale.
And Gannett has just taken over, or would take over with this, all the papers in Tennessee, right? Gannett would basically...
Not with this deal. That was already done. That was the,
Gannett does own
the Milwaukee
Tennessee.
Journal Sentinel parent company
that was
where
it.
Gannett acquired in Tennessee the Memphis Commercial Appeal, the Knoxville News Sentinel, and we also already have the Tennessean.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't I read that tender for those papers got turned down?
It's gone back
it's
and
turned
forth.
Turned down twice.
Yeah. You know, the question is, is Tribune being clever here, just trying to get more money, or are they really trying to hold on to the company?
And what do you think? Because you've been around a long time, Rex, and nobody has greater insight than you do. What do you think?
I think the guys who are running Tribune want to be taken over, and they're just trying to get more money out of Gannett, and that they're ready to give up their company, and Gannett will buy the company and then spin off a few of the properties to perhaps some local owners, and it'll be a really smart thing for Gannett. And in some ways, this is going to be good because Gannett is a good operator in many respects. And
now,
in other ways, there is going to be a loss of competitive voices in a state like Tennessee where one company is going to own own everything,
yeah.
what it could be bad. It depends on how much independence they give their editors.
Well, Digital First, remember them?
Yeah, I do well.
And they bought a lot of things. They went around buying everything. They bought putting down money, buying newspapers all over the place. Turned out not so good.
They're all for sale, individually or in pieces. And those are in our market, we have Kingston, Troy, Saratoga Springs, Oneida. Those are papers in this community.
Right. And in the Digital First situation, their issue wasn't necessarily, you know, how do we manage newsrooms? Their issue was they were up to their ears in debt.
Yeah.
They had
crazy.
So much debt that they had to do everything they could to cut costs. And they honestly cut their newsroom and their entire operations very, very harshly.
But they got, Stewie, they got themselves into debt.
That they did. And that's one of the differentiators with this deal with Gannett, my company, the owner of the Poughkeepsie Journal, is trying to pursue to acquire the Tribune Company.
You've got cash.
Well, Gannett has always been known as a good fiscal
Flush.
Operator. There is certainly cash in the company. The company came out of its split from its television stations last year, and Gannett had no debt. That was the difference. Which is amazing between what Digital First did and even what Tribune did with Zell, Sam Zell, several years ago, where that just, belly up.
So how are they making all this money? In other words, if things are so bad in the newspaper industry, and we're all crying the blues, and they come out of this split with their TV and the rest of it, and they have no debt, and you guys are, no debt, that's incredible. Right. How do they do so well?
Well, there is a little debt because of the Journal Sentinel acquisition in Milwaukee of that company, and it was several hundred million. I don't remember the exact
piece
number.
Of change.
But what they did when the company split, any Gannett that the old quote Gannett company had went to the television side.
Yeah,
the television stations, because we owned at that point some 45 or 50 TV stations, and the debt in the split went to the TV side with the strategic vision that now the newspaper company, the new newspaper company, would be able to make acquisitions and beef up its presence across the country to create what is being called the USA Today Network. That's what the company wants to do.
Well, I've learned something. Thank you for that, Stewart.
Well, we're glad to help. You know, any way that we can help educate you, Dr. Chartok, we help to do our best.
That sneering, condescending thing out of your voice.
With us, media@wamc.org is how you communicate with us. I just keep talking when he interrupts.
Go for it, babe. But he's got a tie on and we don't.
No problem, absolutely. Okay, here's a topic. And Alan, you've often taken note of letters to the editor where people take exception to what's in the publication. And in some certain magazines, the magazine responds to the letter to the editor and says, well, oh yeah, and gets the last word.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I'll punch you in the face.
And you know, that's a lot of an issue for the media. Oftentimes when we are attacked about a story, there isn't a lot that you can say that doesn't seem to be useful journalism. And so the tradition has been that we just stand by our story. We let people have their say and we just have nothing to say. But there is a trend, really, in the last year or so. The New York Times, the LA Times, ProPublica, and many others have posted point-by-point responses to those attacking them. And media ethicists are saying that's a good thing. It makes the news exchange more interactive.
More robust.
More robust, yeah. That it's a really good thing.
So what if somebody who is, I don't want to use bad words, but what if somebody's a nut? We all get those letters.
Yeah.
Do you respond to them? Do you say point by point, you know, your letter is, as I have often quoted, probably several times on this program, Senator Young from, I believe, Ohio, who wrote in, it was quoted in U.S. Senators in their World, responded to somebody, "Dear madam, I think you should know some nut is writing me letters and signing your name."
Yes.
I mean, I have a thing where I have said over and over again, thank you for your note, thank you for your letter, period.
Mm-hmm.
But then I go on the radio and spoil it all and say, I'm not really thinking thank you.
You know, I think I have no problem, and we have done this at the Poughkeepsie Journal, where we will publish a letter to the editor, and then we'll publish an editor's note as a reply. And we do it for a few things. Number one, what is the truth? Because just because you write a letter in doesn't mean everything you say is true. So if it's factually inaccurate, we're going to correct it in the editor's note. We've done this actually twice in the last month. The second thing is that most people have no clue what newsrooms do to try to ensure accuracy and balance. And we will explain that because we feel this is a technique to not only say, well, here's our side of it, But we also want to educate, saying, here's why we did that, because the philosophy of things often gets lost in the larger, you did this and you did that. So we try to help in that way.
Now, here's, we do something similar, but in some cases, we will say, we're not going to publish this letter unless you get rid of the factual misstatements. We intentionally say, even if people respond with letters to the editor, we'll say, okay, we'll publish this paragraph, and this one, right. But yeah, not that one, because right. That makes a statement not supported by the facts.
Do you guys check every name? Do you
oh, yes. We check the names. We talk
in
to the
letters,
people.
But not in the letters, but not in the stuff, not in the comments that come in.
We call every letter to the editor that we publish.
He's talking though, about the response. Online,
we use the Facebook system, which is ideally it is pretty much everybody. Now, can someone create a Facebook name that's fake? Yeah, they could. We do not verify that Joe Schmo really is Joe Schmo if that's how he identifies himself online.
On our blogs, we do moderate though. Like my column appears on a blog. And
I know, and it shows you standing up there, stentorian, with your arms folded across your chest or down by your side.
Hands
I wish
pockets.
I could look like you.
Oh, well, thank
I
you.
I just wish I could look like you.
Your mom would have been shocked. It would be,
she sure would have.
Who did this? Anyway, it would be remarkable. But so there is really that kind of interactivity goes on. We actually have an editor who, our senior editor for public engagement, Tina Tyler, actually talks to people who write these letters to the editor or op-eds and says, no, not going to run this. And sometimes, though, we get stuff that we had a state agency. I'll give you an example of one that's tough. We did an investigative piece that dealt with the state agency who refused to speak to us. The state agency would not talk to us in preparing the story. And then when we came out with our story, wrote a letter to the editor saying, how dare you mischaracterize blah, 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 and put forth their spin on things.
And did you write back about that?
I declined to publish the letter. I thought it was unfair of them to refuse to subject themselves to the back and forth of an interaction with a reporter so that we could get to things. I don't think that our story was factually wrong at all.
Well, you've said it here now, Rex. Here's my problem with this.
Yes.
Wouldn't it have been better to let these foolish people who were probably taking orders from a higher source, they had their say in a letter and then put, as Stu said, you know, an answer saying, it would have been better if you had talked to us in the preparation for the article, which we certainly gave you a chance to do.
You may be right. You know, and it's Stu telling me that he's done this a couple of times. This is how there's some value in this program. Imagine that.
You watch your mouth.
I mean, that is a
very
It's
worth it, people. It's worth it. Keep listening.
We're learning. That may be the right thing to do. Maybe we should do that more often.
It's so clear you were in the right on something like that. The other day, we had something here. We were doing a show about Trump versus Hillary, and this guy calls up. I had written a column the week before in which I took to task the people in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, who had voted down the education budget, the school budget.
Ah.
And I sort of characterized who they were and what they were and what this was all about.
Did you use moderate language or were you?
No, it was moderate, yeah. No, and I used no names. Okay. I used no names. Guy calls up and he says, here's what I want to say about today's topic. And then launches into this diatribe about how I was wrong and how he was personally insulted and all the rest. And it clearly, I think, gave a bad name. It doesn't matter. We never use second names. It's always sort of like Bruce from Poughkeepsie.
Uh-huh.
You know, that kind of thing. And he hijacked the line. He wouldn't get off. So we had to finally, Brian was handling it. I was home with laryngitis. And
you mean it was live?
Yeah, it was live.
No, geez.
Yeah. Don't you have a dump button somewhere?
We did. Right? And that's what we did. We finally turned them off.
Thank you very much. That's enough of this crap. Yeah. Oop. Yeah. So anyway.
but you know what? The guy got his say. And at the very least, he could say, you know what? I disagreed, but I got my say.
He's not going to say anything
he
like that.
He might not. But
he's going to say they shut me off.
But that
after yeah. And everybody. Then I got a letter from a nice lady. Says, I'm an old lady. I'm living on $16,000 a year. I can't afford the school taxes. And that while I understood what he was trying to do there and how offensive that was, I do understand that I can't pay any more in taxes. Now, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. That's very thoughtful. Good. And that deserves to be heard. And
Sure. Generally,
the interactivity is a really good thing. One of the unfortunate aspects we've learned in the digital age is that our great hope that the thousands of voices that are enabled as a result of digitization, we thought that that would bring forth lots of different viewpoints. Unfortunately, it does somewhat to that extent, but it has especially brought out lots of nastiness. we don't have the kind of civil conversation digitally that we had expected unless we moderate heavily, unless we really restrict what people
say.
Well,
it's one of the reasons I like the Times Union, to be honest with you. I don't like to say anything favorable about you at all, Rex, but one of the reasons I like the Times Union
nice shirt, Rex.
Thank you. But no tie.
So much is that you are, you know, a respectful institution. Oh. The newspaper really does not need the same kinds of things that are trying to be sold by the tabloids in New York. And a lot of people like that about you.
Well, thank you. It's part of the, you have a certain tone to a publication. Okay. Everyone does. There's a certain identity to it. And I think there's something to being the newspaper of the state capital that requires us to have a little bit of a remove, a little bit of dignity.
Well, imagine a line, you know, one of those graphs, and at one end is the I word, inflammatory.
Aha.
And at the other end is the B word,
boring. Yeah. I knew that. Yeah.
So somewhere on that, you got to find the right sort of moment.
That's true.
But, you know, this social media stuff, it reflects where the country is. It reflects where we are. Because in the 1950s, when newspapers were very nice and genteel, and, you know, no newspaper reported that our president was confined to a wheelchair in the 1940s.
Or that another one was fooling around.
That another one had some friends on the side there. And that was, frankly, the tenor of the country before Vietnam and Watergate. And now it's a much more polarized nation. And the social media comments and the letters to the editor, they reflect that.
Yeah, but but what causes that? In other words, is it the social media messages which are causing the inflammatoriness, or is it the inflammatoriness which is reflected in the social media?
Yes.
Both.
Both.
So the Trump...
Everyone has a microphone now.
The Trump approach, the sort of, let's say, undignified nature of Donald Trump's emergence as the Republican candidate, is that partly a result of the tenor of the media climate?
No question.
Yeah.
No question. And as it has been said sometimes unkindly or kindly, Trump has had his way with the media.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Trump has had his, because nothing he says, no matter how stupid or crazy or inflammatory, seems, and it's all covered, and we all know that he's big news. We have a vox pop. We mention the T word. Everybody comes on. We mention your great reporting, Rex, in your paper about corruption in the legislature. You can't get a telephone call.
Right. And so I don't know what you can do about that when you say he's played the media. Yes, but how are you supposed to deal with it? And what else can you do other than cover it?
Except, Rex, we have had more letters here about how the media is playing into Trump's hands by giving him all this exposure.
So we're not supposed to cover him? What are you supposed to do?
And there's been tons of fact-checking.
Absolutely.
All
Everybody
over
points
the
out.
Place.
Nobody cares.
No one cares.
Yeah.
No one cares because that's my guy. I'm with him and you in the media, and they basically just capitalize and leverage that all the media is bad and agenda-driven. So
I don't know what... And here we are in a program that's supposed to be analyzing and critiquing media coverage. I'm not sure what else, with the exception of the fact that if you change the format of cable television, you know, the 24-hour cable news shows that repeat things over and over and over and over ad nauseum, that I would say is problematic and amplifies the Trump message. But I don't know how else reporters could have handled this campaign. Maybe in retrospect we'll become wiser. I don't know.
Well, you know, we only have a few seconds, but there's a revolution going on in this country, true revolution. People in the middle are furious. They think a group of politicians have glommed on, and it's the same old, and they're furious about it. And no matter what the institutions like the newspapers or the public radio or anybody else has to say about that, you can't even hear a whisper about why people are voting for this guy, except they are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's an outsider. He's not.
Is Bernie Sanders.
And that's why they've done so well. Is that, you know, I think it's that simple.
Yeah. So anyway, we don't get around to
anything else.
Some of the media topics of the week. We were going to talk about the Egypt air crash, and once again, cable news did their around the clock
coverage.
Speculation. That's
and
right.
And more speculation.
Journalism as speculation. How about that? Speculation as journalism. But we'll have to leave that for the next show. We didn't talk about Megyn Kelly. We talked about Megyn Kelly last week. Did we say enough?
Enough. Yeah, we did.
Is that kind of like Donald Trump? That's one of those topics that takes care of itself. We've said enough. And we barely got around to Sumner Redstone, the chairman emeritus of Viacom, which owns CBS. Who's
Money talks all of this walk.
92 years old, and everybody's trying to figure out what's going to happen to this media empire, and is he able to still control it?
Well,
anyway,
in 10 years, when he's 102, we'll know.
All right. With that, Stu Shinsky, Alan Shartok, and Rex Smith, we thank you all for joining us on The Media Project.
It's wonderful. Represent the flow. publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.